How do you not look at what's happening in this country and try to look at root cause analysis, right? When you start having breakdowns of families and you start having a kind of a spiritual bankruptcies and you start looking at our education system, Lincoln says, show me the kids in the classroom this generation and I'll show you the government of the next generation. Hey, welcome to another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, a podcast committed to bringing stories of hope and insight to those on the front lines of Christian ministry. Our desire is for all of us to see, sense, and experience God's voice through their stories. And through these stories, we may see His hand and hear His voice in our lives. The Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast is brought to you by Romans 12 Ministries, where we are wildly committed to transforming the church, one pastor, missionary, and ministry leader at a time.
All right, here's my opening question. Can you name for me your elementary school teachers from kindergarten all the way to sixth grade? Think about that. Most people, I don't think they can do it. I can do it. My kindergarten teacher was Mrs. Kane. First grade teacher was Mrs. Allen. Second grade teacher, I had three of them, Mrs. Barnett, Miss Chin, and Mrs. Snyder. Third grade, I had Mrs. Bigelis. Fourth grade, I had Mrs. Lapchus. Fifth grade, I had Miss St. George. And sixth grade, I had Mr. Ring. And I think Mr. Ring, well, all of them contributed to my education, obviously. And I loved many of them. But Mr. Ring was probably the main person that was responsible for me getting into teaching, into education, and something that I enjoyed for almost 30 years. And with school getting out, at least in Arizona, and I know in a couple of weeks we have other school districts getting out across the country, I thought it'd be appropriate to just talk about this idea of education. And it's changing so rapidly, especially with COVID. But I just was thinking about the Dewey Decimal Card System. Remember that? We'd go to the library, learn about the Dewey Decimal Card System and how to locate a book. Well, you know what? You can't find those anymore. And there are just so many different things that are changing in education. The growth of homeschooling, the growth of charter schools, the growth of school choice. Just wanted to explore that a little bit because I know that we have ministry leaders and we have pastors and we have their families and we have all of you need to make decisions for your kids, grandkids, about what is best for them when it comes to education. And school choice is a big deal, hot topic, controversial topic, how to use those funds to educate the best way for the future generation. And so I have Joe Higgins here. Joe Higgins is not only the president of Romans 12 Ministries board, he also is the president of a company that he created. It's called ethoslogos.org. ethoslogos.org. And check him out on that website. You can see what he's doing, but he's passionate for education. And he is married to Chris. They have two adult children. I am David Towne, the host of the Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast. Joe Higgins, thanks so much for coming.
Always good seeing you, David.
Man, I am so glad you're here. And we've only done one podcast on education.
All right.
But it's always changing. And it's such a hot topic. So I thought it would be perfect for you to come in because you are really a business guy,
right?
With a passion for education,
right?
Where did that start?
God kind of led it to me. You know, all good things start that way. I'm a long history of all kinds of businesses under the sun, and I got blessed to get into the charter movement back in 2014, 2015 in Arizona. And we opened up our first school, 500 scholars, students showed up day one, doubled every year, till the point where we have about 7,000 and then in a couple states. And I left that group and I'm trying to do something similar through a model called classical education, which is real big in the Christian communities, homeschool communities, all around the country. So I am uniquely positioned to be able to sit down and say, here's what's going on in Nevada and here's what's happening in Indiana and here's what Texas looks like and here's what looks nationally in the movement. I'm very specific on classical ed, which is values and virtues based. And based on Western civilization and kind of old school.
So what is the big why though? But why?
So meandering road of how I got here, but I've come to the conclusion that the solution to our country is faith, family, and schools. So I've kind of cleared my plate and I'm only focused on those things. And schools, of course, kind of ties together a lot of the business experience I've had, policy, politics experience I've had. And it's the big way to make a big difference in a small community, a church, a city, a community, and a country.
So you have some concerns right now with our educational system?
Yeah. How do you not? How do you not look at what's happening in this country and try to look at root cause analysis, right? When you start having breakdowns of families and you start having a kind of a spiritual bankruptcies and you start looking at our education system, one of our famous quotes that we've talked in the past is, Lincoln says, show me the kids in the classroom this generation and I'll show you the government of the next generation. And we're seeing so many pressures on faith, family, and schools that I've kind of rolled up my sleeve and said, let's try to figure out the school side.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember growing up in the 70s and my parents were concerned about education and actually pulled me out of the public schools and put me in a private school for a year, went back into the public school. But this discussion has been going around for a long, long time.
Right.
You know, what makes a school good? What kind of curriculum should be adopted? You know, what is the best way to teach kids? Is it with, you know, small groups, big groups? You know, this podcast, we promote it as, you know, a refresh, restore podcast for ministry leaders and their families. But really, our listening audience is just a widespread of people, not only in this country, but beyond. And so education is a big deal. And so I guess my question to you is, what are some major concerns that you have that you'd like to see switched? Is it curriculum? Is it the buildings? Is it the quality of teaching? Is it leadership? Is it politics? What do you think?
Wow. What a large question. You got to look to when it started and what the roots and the histories and why are we here today, right? Why are we tearing down statues in the middle of the day of these, well, you know, Teddy Roosevelt in front of the museum in New York City. I mean, at what point do we get to that level?
Don't touch Lincoln, right. Whatever you do.
So
they have.
So I spent a long time trying to figure that out. And the roots of it, and based on how I built the curriculum and how I'm working, what I'm doing, but I would go through history textbooks, 1920s, 30s, 50s, 80s, 90s, current. And I would just look at the questions because the question answers the content, right? So I get to about 1995, 96 or something like that. And all the questions start shifting to, you know, how did America exploit the Indians? Why did Christopher Columbus, it was negative. It was critical. It was critical American history, critical race theory, critical, whatever you want to call it. That's when I saw it creep into the history textbooks. Now look at those kids that went through that system, Howard Zinn. You should kind of know that name and do some digging into that world. Look at that world. Those are the teachers now in your classrooms. Those are professors teaching teachers. And of course, you see that roll through our society to the point where we're tearing down statues in the middle of broad daylight. So that is the root of it. And it's a loss of what's special about America. It's a loss of why this country has worked, why we accept with open arms who comes in here, why you can wake up one day as a poor kid and become a gazillionaire if you want, if that's your passion and your drive. So that's a big part. Second, that I've really been digging into, because when I talk to parents, like, why is the school that I built and we built and we worked on working? Two things that would come back to me are history. Kids love the history. Number two was the culture and the value and virtues you're teaching in your campuses. I'm seeing show up in my homes. So then I got digging into that. Like, where do we learn values and virtues? Of course, your family is probably the primary. Your faith and your background in your church. Your community, right? Are you living in a big city where you're kind of not supported? Or you're in a small town where everybody's looking out for each other and you go out and play all day long? But importantly, schools. So what is schools' roles in that? And then after No Child Left Behind in the 2000s and Common Cores, we moved to this test, test, test game. So what you incentivize, you get, right? So if we're going to teach to a test and we're going to make tests a big deal, then of course we're going to be designing our curriculum, designing our schools to have test takers, not deep, rich, critical thinkers. We don't value things like art and music and values and virtues and those instructions. We value, hey, can you do the Pythagorean theorem? So that's if you look policy-wise, and if we're going to reverse all that, you have to look at character building and values and virtues. You have to look at Western Civ, which started in Athens and Greeks and Romans and Socrates and Plato and got tweaked and identified by Augustine and Christianity and this weird, long arc, 2,500-year story that let America be what America is. And when you start to dissect that and pull that apart and rip that out and say that's not good, you can't help but have problems in society. So faith family schools. That's that's to bundle that up.
We talked a little bit beforehand about how COVID pretty much was a big tipping point. There were things were cracked already, obviously, from what you just shared, but the crack became huge.
Right.
And what have you seen since then when it comes to school choice, schools just in general, from the COVID?
Right. So I'm on a couple school boards, high school and an at-risk youth high school. And we are putting more money into psychology and cracks and the social fabric of kids, their mental health. I have people in my own family, kids that have breaks and that are totally normal, great kids, but just under that pressure cooker broke. I think you're seeing a lot of families finally looking at curriculum, finally looking at what's going on, finally looking behind the curtain of what happens in the magic of school and the authority of a teacher and authority of a school district or a superintendent or whatnot. And they're like, well, that's not that good. It doesn't align with who I am. That may not be the best place to have my child. So you're seeing this massive growth in the homeschool world. At the same time, charter schools, which is where I play, had a big growth from about 1998 to about 2016-17. And then there's been a real shutdown of the charter movement that I'm in the middle of right now. Very political, very policy-based, lots of roadblocks. And if you look around, there's not a lot of new charters starting up. So they've tried to shut the movement down there. But parents always find a way. So when you look at the decline in charter growth, you look at the struggles in public schools, you look at the homeschool growth, that tells you parents are looking individually every day, every community, every school, and saying, I'm going a different direction. Many parents have great schools and they're awesome and things are wonderful. So I'm not painting a broad brush to every public school in this country, but that's a very intimate and very personal decision based on your child, your family's belief, your worldview, and what you want. So,
you know, it seems to me that we have shifted over the years in the story of our country where it was always the decision of the parents. In fact, it was the role of the parents to educate their kids. And it has been shifted now that, hey, we're the kids, you know what, the schools are now the ones in charge. And it feels like there's this pulling back of parents, hey, wait a second. We've seen a little bit, like you said, behind the curtain, there's a little bit of Wizard of Oz there.
Right.
And I don't really like what I see. I cannot right. believe this is what's being taught. Right. I have actually watched it with my eyes as my kids in front of the screen.
Right.
And so there's this pulling back. I guess my question is, where's the hope in all this?
Wow. Well, that's what gets me up every morning, right? So that's what is the battlefront for me. That is the game. We have to create opportunities for parents, no matter where they're at, to support them in that decision. I think it's classical model. I think it's classical ed with our Charlotte Mason blend. That's the answer. Because it's a system and a format that gets back to the roots of the things we talked about, history, great literature, classical ed, values and virtues. That's my battlefront. And whatever that looks like, is it a charter school? Is it a private school? Can I help homeschool families? What does that look like? Up to and including how does legislatures handle looking at their state and their choices? I think you have to look at this voucher discussion. It's called ESAs or school where there's a Supreme Court decision that basically said you can fund a family, but you can't fund a Catholic school or a Christian school or a private school. So that opened the door, and I think there's 6 or 8 states that have passed laws. There's another 4 or 5 looking at it. They happen to be red states that are saying, okay, parent, we're going to give you that $7,000 or $10,000 or $8,000. Go to the public school, go to the charter school, go to your Christian school or homeschool, and you figure it out because we think you're the one that should make that decision. That is the ultimate free market choice. That is the ultimate, I know my kid better than anybody, and it's a lot of power back to that. All kinds of bumps and bruises and logistics about that, but that is market finding a way. That is the legislatures in some of these states listening to their parents, looking at the polling data and saying, we got to have a solution here. I'm a big competition guy, right? If you're frustrated at the DMV, put me in the DMV business and I'll make sure the experience is much better, right? So let the free market come in and start having discussions about what does mom and dad want? What's important to you? Maybe it's a STEM school. Maybe it's a Montessori school. Maybe it's my classical model. But, you know, let us compete and let us wake up every day as a leader of a school group, say, what does mom and dad want? How do I keep the best teachers? How do I train them so that we deliver on grades, which is important, right? Getting them ready for academics, but also what kind of humans are we building? What kind of critical thinking skills are we imparting upon them? Our mission statement in our schools is we partner with parents. We're not there to do it. We're there to help you and be a partnership with you.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump ahead. Yeah. Let's jump ahead. Let's go 20 years. The year is, my math was not real good. So it's probably, 2043. We both will hopefully still be alive. What will schools look like in 2043?
Wow. Well, schools that I can research back to started in the Lyceum under Aristotle. So we're talking 400 BC-ish. So they've been around for a long time in all kinds of different maturations.
And did you get a classical education for this?
a lot of Catholic nuns were banging me over the knuckles. So I think we've seen through COVID, it's not done through a computer. I think the Zoom piece isn't correct. I think there's a human connection back and forth. I don't care if you're Aristotle 2,500 years ago or, you know, the classical model really started in the 1200s in French universities. There's a transfer of knowledge back and forth between two people. I don't know if it's mom and dad to kid or prayer pastor to child or whatever, but there's that coddling of the mind. And that can't be replaced. I don't think you can replace it with AI yet. I don't think it can be replaced with a screen or a video it's got to be a transfer of knowledge. So I hope that's always part of it. I will always make sure that's part of it. Doesn't mean we don't embrace technology. We don't use it as a tool, just like the calculator is a tool. You still need to understand the theories behind math. AI is a great language tool, but you still don't know how to write a 5-paragraph essay. Mm-hmm. There's a ton. What I always say is we're awash in information, but we don't have the discernment and the critical skills to weave through what is right, true, good, and beautiful. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, I've been doing some consulting with different schools, and it's interesting the cultures of schools. There's sometimes I go into a school to do a workshop or to give a spiel, and nobody looks at me. I mean, the kids are walking around somewhat zombie-like with their heads down. And then other schools, their culture is different. And where they're looking at you, and they're opening the door for you, and they're greeting you, and they're saying, how can I help you? And so I think culture is such a big deal. And when I ask parents, what do you want in this school? It very rarely does it involve, I want my kids to get grades, these good grades. It's really more character issues.
Sure.
Which is what I hear you saying.
Oh, totally. Totally. That's the world we're in, right? That's what that's what I want for my kids. I put them through Catholic schools. I'm on Catholic school boards. I'm in that. I like that. I see that value, but how can we export that? How can we let every rural homeschool family that wants to do that? How can we create a place where a charter school or a private school. So that's what I want. And I was, when we drove old cars and we would send our kids to Catholic schools, but how do we make that available to the masses? And, you know, you could talk about education reform and policies and you can go through the top down approach, and it just hasn't worked. You got interests in there with unions, and you got, you know, you're goring my ox and you're taking away my kids and I don't have money and they're good. And there's a lot of drama there, but the rubber meets the road with the culture, with the leader of that school that opens the doors and teaches the kids to open the doors, is focused on that. It's the focus. It's where we put our attention and what school's about. Mm-hmm. And in this world of AI and in this world of evolution technology, it's going to be the kids that can work in a group and have a critical thought and hold a conversation and be creative and say where they want to go that will drive the AI and use it as a tool. But it's not going to be the test takers. Test takers are going to be replaced by AI. So when we look down the road, what are we building? And it's the same question I'm sure is being asked back in the Lyceum in 400 BC. What are we building? And they talked a lot about virtue ethics and the golden mean of Aristotle. And that it's because if we make good humans and we make good people and we know right from wrong and good from bad and we understand our vices and our virtues, the government runs better. The communities run better. You know, de Tocqueville came out here after we formed as a country and toured America and left with, man, their churches are doing it, their service groups are doing it, the Rotaries or whatever it was at that time, their schools, they have a fabric that makes America what makes America work.
Yeah, a moral fabric.
A moral fabric, right. So
you got to fight for that.
Got to fight for that.
That's the game. And that's what you're doing. I guess the question I have for you too is, let's say I'm a mom and dad of a, you know, person that is not really deciding what where to put their child to school, and they're wrestling with that because they're just not sure. They don't have the confidence, maybe in their particular school. I mean, what would you say to them?
Oh boy, are there some activated and engaged parents now? I mean, I can't tell you. Folks running for school board, showing up at school boards and speaking out, looking at what's in the library. I mean, there's a lot of engagement going on at the public school level. A robust charter school state is cool, right? Because you have all, you know, STEM and, you know, project-based learning and Montessori or classical. That's a choice. The private Christian schools are expensive. There's ways to do it. There's always a way. You pray about it and figure it out. There's some states that have tax credits and some states that do vouchers. I'm watching that balloon right now. Arizona, where we're from, passed an ESA voucher law, open universal, about a year and a half ago. And all the Christian private schools that I talk to are full. I'm seeing models where homeschool pods are popping up. I'm seeing churches that come together and bring 30, 40 kids together and say, how do we do this, right? Because we have parents at work, but we can't be home and do homeschool, but how do we come together? All kinds of market innovations are happening because you're putting the parent in charge of that discussion. The parent knows their kid. The parent's going to seek out and find out something that fits their lifestyle, their worldview, who they are. I think that's choice. It's about choice.
You know, one of the things I used to always say was when I worked in a school, which was kind of unique, and I think sometimes it shocked people, but I said, you know, as we were discussing things with parents and in speeches, said, we are at best an extension of the home. The magic happens in the home.
Yep.
We will teach knowledge and virtue and expose them to these incredible novels and get them to be full of wonder and curiosity. But you are the teachers.
Yep.
You know your kid best. We're an extension of the home.
Yep.
And I really do believe that.
Right. Let's talk about some of the things we deal with in a school setting coming in the door. Screen time. It's insane. My kids just missed it or caught the very tail end of it. But these kids today, they're screen native. They're in the middle of it all the time. So to get them to read a classical book or to go deeper takes some time. And we need to work on them. And we need to have good teachers. And we need to really spend time with that. So that's number one. And that's something that can be regulated and talked about at the home level. Number two, I talked to a 28-year kindergartner teacher. And I said, hey, what's different from when you started teaching to today? And she said, hey, Joe, the kids are the same. It's the parents. Instead of kind of partnering, they're in here fighting for, I gave my kid a C, they're fighting for the A, right, at kindergarten. So it's having some accountability of what the partnership is. And we've had many of those conversations with our parents to say, look, this is a learning process, right? He didn't turn his homework in. Don't come in and argue for him. Let's make it a learning process because this is a process.
Let's help him grow up.
Let's help him grow up. Let's help him be that. So maybe that's indicative of society. Maybe that's, you know, the reality. I don't know what it is that's happening, but we see it in the school settings. Mm-hmm. So it's a battle.
It is such a unique season in education now. Because if we believe the headlines that teachers are leaving.
Right.
They're getting frustrated. And there's all these different school choices is a hot topic. But I'm thinking of our pastors, you know, who are navigating through this. They've had to navigate through into COVID when it came to politics. And now they're navigating with education. Because from the pulpit, they can't just say, okay, everybody needs to go to a Christian school. Because they've got public school teachers in there.
But what I think you're going to see, and I'm seeing just the tip of it, a pastor that didn't want to get into education and because he's got public school teachers and Christian school and charters, he didn't want to talk about that, is now going, I have a worldview, and I'm here on Sunday trying to teach and show and view and model a worldview, and I'm losing him in my public schools. So you're having him now say, we need to do something. We need to make some moves. We need to become part of this discussion because that's the future. If we don't get to the kids and surround them in positiveness and goodness and truth and beauty, we're going to have a problem down the road. So I think you're at the tipping point. I think being able to afford a private Christian school through the vouchers program in some of these states, laying bare what happened in COVID, all this goofy stuff in the news about just everything, right? It seems like K-12 is in the middle of it all. Again, it's glorified and they make a big deal out of it and it's happening, but it's not in every school, but it's scaring parents and pastors. Mm-hmm. And if you're a pastor that's afraid to jump into it and say, this is what we believe and here's where we want our flock to follow and go, well, maybe you're in the wrong business because that, you know, it gets me up every morning to say, let's create it to not have a barrier to entry because of cost, or I don't know how to do it, or so.
Right.
That's my mission.
Well, Joe, there is an opening at a school real close by for a kindergarten teacher. I wondered if you were interested in applying.
The little ones scare me.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
My two favorite times of running a school is drop-off first day of kindergarten. And I would always, you know, the tears, some were excited, the kids are going, moms are crying, kids happy, some it's the kids crying, moms excited. And I would find the name of one or two, and I would call mom about midday, and I'd say, hey, they're doing great, just want to give you an update. That's one. And the other is graduation. I mean, out of all these school boards and things I do, I always try to hit graduation because it's beautiful, right? It's like a new life and a new adventure, and where am I going to go, and what am I going to make, and all the commencement speeches, and those are just, that's why we're here, right, is to... those two moments.
Yeah. You know? Well, you do inspire me. I mean, you could easily be kicking back a little bit, but you're not. You're jumping into the fray, stirring things up, thinking creatively. So thank you, Joe, for being part of the game, being, you know, not just as Teddy Roosevelt, you know, out in the stands, but a man in the arena. Cool. You model that for me. And cool. God's going to use you and has used you in a mighty way. My last question is, who's your all-time favorite teacher?
Oh, Mr. Gabalski.
Tell me about him.
He was a new teacher in eighth grade at St. Peter and Paul, and he just made a connection. He was a male teacher. You know, we don't have many of those in schools, and I love to bring a guy teacher in those middle grades because they need that male influence and energy. Just made math fun. He went on to become the vice principal at this high school that I'm on the board that I went to, and I got to work with him for years, and he had two boys, or three, I think, and I check in with him and catch up with him, and but he was it. So.
And what, besides being a man and a, what did he do in the classroom that really impacted you?
He was really close to her age. That could have been part of it, right? Okay. So we related with him. He wasn't the old, you know, 85-year-old nun that was you know, 4'2". And just made it experiential. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember having good discussions about stock markets and buying mm-hmm. stocks, and mm-hmm. that was in our math class. So he made it real.
So practical things.
Practical things.
Right.
And he just related and made lessons important yeah. to me.
I tell you, my favorite teachers, they had some common denominators. One is they really liked me.
Yep.
I sensed that they really loved me. Yep. Even if my behavior was a little bit off, they loved me. You could just tell. Yep. Number two, they made learning fun.
Yep.
And that was whether it's creativity or activities or something. It wasn't just this, you know, rote stuff.
Right.
And number three, they went the extra mile for me. Whether it's a note here or there, or a greeting, or coming out, you know, to the recess and throwing footballs, right. Those are the teachers. And so, you know what? As we begin this summer vacation, I just encourage our listeners to be praying for your teachers in your area, praying for the schools,
yep.
because it's foundational for as we move forward.
Yep, Lincoln had it right, and I, you know. You're watching the news and you're getting up frustrated and you're angry and you're all fired up. Find a way to do something, right? Get, you know, there's so much you can do. Don't just be part of the complaint team. Find a lane that you have some background, or you're retired or whatever it is. Don't let this country slide. Yeah. Step for it and get into it, because it's worth fighting for. Look what the blessings we've all gotten in our lives and our families and our kids. Don't just get angry. Do something.
Thanks for modeling that for us.
Cool.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Joe.
Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us today at another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, a podcast sponsored by Romans 12 Ministries. For more information on Romans 12 Ministries, visit us at romans12ministries.org or give us a call at 520-982-5877. May we all continue to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer.